Paranormal Cafe. I am your host, Rob Simcox. Interesting interview with Professor Searle and Bradley. It was a great interview. I loved talking about that kind of stuff. But now we have up a gentleman who is a subject I love talking about because of the, I don't want to say controversiality of it, but the statistical probability of it. We're going to be talking about Bible codes, and the gentleman's name is Richard Sherman, loves to be called Ed, and I want to welcome him to the show. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Good evening. How are you?
Good, sir. How's everything treating you?
Very good.
Give a little bit of background on yourself, Ed, and tell people who you are and what and who you represent.
Okay. I am a mathematician. I've been practicing for the last 38 years. I basically provide consulting services to insurance companies and to large corporations and government that self-insure. We do forecasting and analysis to help them estimate their self-insurance costs. I have a master's degree in mathematics. I've passed all of the PhD exams in mathematics at the University of California at San Diego. I then went on and passed all of the actuarial exams to qualify as a fellow of the Casualty Actuarial Society and member of the American Academy of Actuaries. Back in 1997, there was a book that topped the New York Times bestseller list by Michael Drosnin called The Bible Code. I read it along with a lot of other people. I was extremely skeptical. But I was intrigued by the challenge of trying to estimate the probabilities that some of the things that he found in his book could simply be due to chance. And so I developed the formulas and so forth to do that, and reviewed his book very thoroughly and concluded that virtually everything in his book was such that you probably could have searched the Jerusalem phone book and found similar types of things. The important thing there is that, you know, all these codes are in Hebrew.
Right.
But then there were a few that were very, very unusual. And so I started looking for ways to try to answer the question, is there something more there? And concluded that to really investigate this thing, what we needed was a really solid Hebrew expert, so that once we found a code in Hebrew in the Hebrew Bible, we could see if it was part of a phrase or sentences or several sentences. And the longer the sentence was that we found, or sentences, the more unlikely it would be that it could be explainable by chance. Well, in the last 10 years, I've worked with an Israeli physicist, Nathan Jacoby, who lives in Israel, and we've been examining the claims about this, and we have been totally blown away and astonished by the hundreds of very lengthy codes that we have found in the Bible, starting with this these simple single word codes that Drosnin found. And as I say, the single word codes are not significant at all, but when you end up with lengthy codes, we have some codes that are 100, 200, the longest one is 296 letters long.
Wow.
And the chances that that could just be coincidence dropped to zero after a while. And so I put up a website and published results on it for the last 10 years. It's called Bible Code Digest. We've had 5 million visitors to the site in those 10 years. Today we get about 2,000 visitors a day to the site. And on that, we publish our research findings, which cover all sorts of topics. Most of them are current event type things that seem to be suggested by the codes we've found. There are some things that are more historical, such as codes about Jesus or Buddha, and we have huge collections of those. And they're very much on target with what you might expect them to say. So I've just been blown away by the evidence, and I know there are other scientists who think it's a lot of malarkey, and they're entitled to their opinion, but I think that the whole phenomenon itself, I think, can be shown to be real. Now, any one particular finding, there are a number of uncertainties about it that make it could make it questionable. And some of these uncertainties are worth talking about because they have an impact on the question of, can you use these codes to predict the future? Our experience after looking at thousands of possible codes is that although a few of them are truly predictive, attempting to use them to make predictions of the future would be very, very hazardous and uncertain. Some of the reasons for that, the codes that we have found almost universally express some clear-cut point of view. And by that, we have codes that express a terrorist point of view, or an American point of view, or a Republican one, or a Democratic one, or a Catholic one, or a Muslim one, or a Buddhist one. The point of view expressed by the code is usually pretty clear. But if what's happening is that we're getting these prophetic fragments that are expressions of opinion, then you can't rely on opinions as being truth. And so we have to take a look at these things and say, boy, this is amazing stuff, but trying to make some conclusive findings on the basis of it would be extremely hazardous and ill-advised. But what we could say, I think, is that this phenomenon is real, and that it authenticates that there is a supernatural source and authorship to the Hebrew Bible.
I haven't done a lot of research on Bible codes. I just am very interested in how it all works out, the statistical probability and everything like that. This is one of those deals, Ed, I think you'd have to agree, is it's either going to be, you either have a statistical, I don't think there's any in-between ground here, personally. You either have a case that it's either 100% true and it has to be divine, or it's a complete fraud.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I think there is a middle ground, and
okay.
That's the ground that I take. And as I was trying to say, these codes are prophetic fragments. They express a point of view or viewpoint, and it could be the point of view of a liar. But what we have is some sort of expression that seems to have a source, and it's you can't always depend on what it's saying because you don't know who is being quoted. You could quote the devil himself, who is a liar, and you'd have to come up with something that's very clear-cut, and yet it's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a reason, personally, why these codes have this characteristic, and that is that whoever put them in there did not want to have people just focusing on what you can find in the codes, but rather wanted people to focus on what the literal text said.
Okay.
So, in other words, the codes have what the actual words on the page say, and the implication is maybe you need to focus more on what the literal page says and not so much on what these codes say, although the codes are extremely fascinating and in some cases are pretty predictive.
Now, what you're using as the basis of the codes, are you using the Torah?
Using the Torah and the rest of the Hebrew Old Testament, the Tanakh.
Okay. Okay.
It's both.
We're using both. Okay. Now, let's talk about statistical probability, because you said you had the one that was over 200 letters long. That's the longest you said you've ever found one.
296.
Amazing. Now, what type? What are we finding with these codes? And you know, what do you say to a person that is talking, say, oh, well, you know, we had a call earlier that said, you know, they've always been curious about the people who say they can take out Moby Dick and they can get certain codes out of that as well. What do you say along that lines? Because I've heard that argument put forth before on the Bible codes.
Well, that is true. But you have to look at what it's true about. What it's true about is when you just take a single word in Hebrew and look for it, You can do that in a Hebrew translation of War and Peace or the Jerusalem phone book. And in fact, statistically, you can predict how many times you're going to find it by chance as a code, where a code being where the Hebrew letters are equally spaced from one another. So this kind of thing, it's not surprising that you find some things like this, and you can find them in Moby Dick because they're just a single word. But if you take those examples that you have that are posted on the internet, say from Moby Dick, you look before and after Moby Dick, continuing up and down the column of letters, and what you have is gibberish before it and after it. So the thing that separates what we're doing from what was done earlier is we start with that initial word, say it's every tenth letter. We continue every tenth letter before it and after it, and take the letters that you glean from that, put them together, have a Hebrew expert look at it and say, there is something here, that a phrase, a sentence, multi-sentences that are in understandable, good Hebrew that say something. And, you know, the chances of there just not being gibberish there, but something that makes strong sense gets very, very small quite quickly the longer the code becomes.
Okay.
So when you've got, you know, we've got 800 lengthy codes on our website, Bible Code Digest.
BibleCodeDigest.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so those are 800 examples that are way beyond anything that Drosnin did.
Okay.
Because we found something extensive that continued beyond the first word that he chose to look for. And that's a very critical distinction.
Mm-hmm. Have you found any codes that kind of make the hair on the back of your neck stand up? Because I think that's almost an aha moment. You know where I'm going with this.
I know what you're saying. We have had some that seem to be predictive, and we just kind of said, well, no way. And darn if they didn't turn out to be true. And, you know, in fact, we even published these things on our website, even though we objected to them, to try to be honest in our reporting. Just to give you an example, this was 3 months after 9/11 had hit, and we looked for the two words, Saddam is guilty. And what we found was a code that said, you will crush the guilty Saddam, and the month of ER will be restful. Well, we thought, well, gee, this was before the war had even started or anything like that, and what's this month of ER? Well, the month of ER in Israel is May 3rd to May 31st. And in particular, in 2003, May 3rd, 2003 was the day that George Bush allegedly announced that the war was over. And so it hit it down, the first day of that month hit it to the point of accuracy to a period of a month's time in the war in Iraq when things were relatively calm. But we had this before it happened, but we kept saying, oh, this can't possibly be true. And yet it came down to the day, at least if you take that interpretation. Now, obviously, different people can take different interpretations about Iraq, and I certainly respect that. But at least the important point here, again, is, again these codes come from a point of view. And it may be a point of view you agree with or disagree with, but it's a clearly recognized point of view. Another example we had, right after the Mel Gibson's movie The Passion came out, we had an Orthodox Jewish Hebrew expert that we were working with, and he found this incredibly long code about Mel Gibson. And personally at the time, I mean, I will admit to you, I am a Christian, a follower of Christ, and at the time I was feeling fairly positive thoughts about Mel Gibson. But what the code said was, Mel Gibson is rotten to the core. And we objected to it, but we published it. And, well, guess what? It was right. And so even though it presented something that we disagreed with, we said, well, let's put it out there. And we did. We tried to be honest about these things. Another example, we were looking for a code about Buddha, and we found one that's 108 letters long that basically describes the difficulties that Buddhism has had in spreading outside of Tibet just because of cultural differences between Tibetan society and the Western world. Well, the thing that blew us away was this 108-letter-long code. If you were to go to Wikipedia, type in 108, what you would find is that 108 is the most significant number in Hinduism and Buddhism. And there are just scads and scads of symbolisms that go with 108. And, for example, this prayer bead that the Buddhists have has 108 beads in it. And when they do a meditation, they just like rosary beads, they go through these 108 beads as one round of a meditation. And they're just scads of these types of things that are there. Now, you asked me about, are there some things we found that make my hair stand on end? I think that was one of your original things. I would say this, if you go to a literal verse in the Bible, Daniel 12:4, it says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end time. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." Now, different Bible commentators have said this "many shall run to and fro" could be talking about a time of increased travel. But actually, if you look at the way the Hebrew word appears in other verses, there's another verse, 1 Chronicles 16:9, it says, "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth." And that "run to," the eyes of the Lord look to and fro, is the same Hebrew word as was that "many shall run to and fro." So it's almost like talking about a divine search engine, or it's a prophecy of search engines and their existence. And that would that the emergence of these and an unsealing of a lot of text that can be found through a search engine, and that's what you do when you search for Bible codes, is going to be a sign that we are in the end times.
Wow. So that's, do you believe that's the reason it was actually entered into this? Do you believe that was, that's why this is, has become about? Because we're so close to end times and we're able to search this computer-wise?
Well, I think that's a very plausible hypothesis. I mean, would I be willing to stake my life on it? Probably not. But I think it's what I just told you, I think, is very suggestive that could well be what it's saying. See, I'm not some kind of religious nut. I'm more of a scientific type.
Right.
I tend to take things with several grains of salt, if not a salt shaker.
That's a good explanation of it. Very
and,
good.
Here's one to make your hair stand on end.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the 40th chapter of the book of Ezekiel, this the literal text is describing all of the physical characteristics of the third temple that the Jews want to build on the Temple Mount, where the Dome of the Rock, that huge Muslim shrine, is located. Well, within that one chapter, if you take the Hebrew word for war, you would expect to find it by chance four times, just by chance, just because of the, you know, the combinations of the letters and the opportunities to find something, to find that Hebrew word war, where the letters are equally spaced from one another.
Right.
Well, it actually appears 17 times rather than four times. And the statistical odds of that happening are about 1 in 1,000,000.
Wow.
That's just a very simple example of a single word code. You don't have to argue about whether a Hebrew expert has interpreted things properly or not. It's just, and what it's saying is prophetically, stuff around this building of the third temple in Jerusalem is going to be sort of a catalyst in the next war, which we hope is not during our lifetimes, but I wouldn't count on it.
Now, have you been able to find anything to indicate possibly when that war, ballpark, will start, or has it been too
No, we have not.
Okay.
Yeah, the problem with trying to do dating is that if you take a single year in Hebrew, it's only a few letters.
Right.
And anything that's just a few letters is everywhere by chance.
Right.
So it's hard to conclude something from a phenomenon that's naturally everywhere by chance.
Right.
You're just sort of overwhelmed with coincidence. You have to find things that are really, really unusual before you should begin to be impressed.
Right. Where do you think when it comes down to you, your own beliefs? Where do you think this all came from? I mean, obviously, you know, people have their own idea for why it was imprinted and possibly why it happened, but why do you believe it was imprinted in here? I mean, and that this comes at you more from a spiritual standpoint than a statistical standpoint.
Well, you know, I think I've already touched on that in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
When I first heard about this, I was very skeptical about it. I am somebody who is a person of strong faith. I believe in what the Bible basically says. I didn't think, and I would think that if there were codes there, that it would be God himself who put them in there by dictating the text to the people who took down the books. And I'm aware there are like 39 authors or whatever, so you arguably can say, how can it all mesh together unless there's an orchestrator to the thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing from the Old Testament, we have codes that spread throughout the entire Old Testament. The full length of it that are very long and interesting is that the whole thing does tie together, even though there are 30-some authors of the Old Testament. So my own personal belief is that it was put there just like the U.S. Mint, when it makes $20 bills, puts in a little authentication strip that says USA 20, USA 20, USA 20, because counterfeiters cannot produce fake dollar bills that have that kind of an authentication strip in them. And I think that these codes are kind of intrinsic evidence that there is a divine authorship.
Okay.
Now, I am aware that Michael Drosnin, who wrote the book, said, well, it was aliens who wrote the Bible, and they were a lot smarter than human beings, and so they were enabled to encode the Bible, and they knew the future, and they knew about possible disasters coming to the earth, and they wanted to rescue mankind by giving them an ability to predict when those disasters might occur. The only problem is, again, I think that this kind of code stuff is almost impossible to use for predictive purposes. So if aliens were trying to use it for that purpose, they really didn't pick a very convenient way to notify mankind that this is, you know, there was some meteorite about to strike or some war that was to occur and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
My other thought on this is that the subject matter of the codes really ties very, very tightly to whatever the literal text is talking about.
Okay.
And that to me is an indicator that the Bible isn't just a document written by aliens, but perhaps it is what it says it is. And we find, for example, if you want codes about Jesus, we look within Isaiah 53, one of the leading prophecies about Jesus in the Old Testament. We found about 300 codes about Jesus just in that one chapter. And you know, if you're trying to do this kind of encoding, it's really easy to do if you're only putting one word in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you try doing it where you put in two or three or four words, and every time you try to insert something else as an encoded thing, you end up having to change what the literal text says. And so you literally, to encode a lot of codes within a text really would require you to simultaneously do it for both the codes and the literal text and to have it all make sense. And I don't think even our most powerful computers would be capable of encoding a text like this that made good sense literally. that had all of these codes, that had a huge number of them. It's just, it's beyond human ability.
You know, you mentioned, Ed, the theory of aliens encoded the Bible and the like. When I hear stuff like that, sometimes I have to say to myself, does that say more about the person putting forth that type of theory than it does about the theory itself? In other words,
well,
are they afraid to?
What it suggests to me is they don't want to accept the possibility that it could be what it says it is.
Okay.
In other words, the Bible says it is, you know, Scripture is breathed from God, that it's inspired. And so they're inclined to say, well, there's something going on behind this that's really not being said properly. It's misleading, and it's not what it purports to be. So I think what it says is it's about somebody who's inclined to be very skeptical about organized religion. And of course, there are reasons to have such skepticism. I don't deny that. But I think that they've got a bent in that direction.
That's exactly where I was going with it. Is if it says more about the person actually putting forth that theory than the person is actually than the actual theory itself, because. Yeah, you know, it's almost like saying it's sort of the fail-safe. I don't have to believe in God in order for this to be true. Type of deal.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. But the only problem is who created the aliens.
Yeah, it's just one. It's another step.
You kind of remove it a step, but
exactly.
The question of origins is still there.
Well, you know, here's a question for you. This people think that Bible codes really started with the computer age, and the truth is, it started way before that, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It all goes back to the Orthodox Jewish belief that on Mount Sinai, God dictated the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, to Moses letter by letter.
Mm-hmm.
And he took them down, without spaces between the words and by direct dictation. And codes themselves, of course, are such that you don't have the spaces between the words, and the person coming trying to translate the code has to figure out where they might put in spaces.
Mm-hmm. That's hard enough to do with an English language, much less the language used at the time, because of the every item represents a number and a letter and the like. Okay.
Yes.
Where what's the future of this? Because it seems like it. Rather, every time somebody investigates it, it seems to open up more questions than answers. And it
well, that's a very good question. To be honest with you, what we have found after publishing all this research, I mean, BibleCodeDigest.com has like 500 pages of research findings.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody skeptical comes up and says, well, we don't like the Hebrew. We don't think the Hebrew was translated well or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we say, well, why don't we compare credentials? Nathan Jacoby was totally educated in Israel from kindergarten through a PhD, lived there for a long time. He was an American, taught Hebrew for years. He now is back in Israel for the last 4 years, and he only speaks Hebrew to his Jewish wife. They live in an Orthodox Jewish community, and I think he's got pretty good credentials. And often the people say, well, this isn't good Hebrew. Well, you take somebody that knows 1,000 words in Hebrew, and if they're looking at the translation of somebody like Jacoby, who knows at least 100,000 words in Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
then the guy who knows 1,000 is going to say, there are things here I don't recognize.
Right.
And, well, yeah, duh, that's because you don't know the language as well as the expert does.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. Have you found hot spots in the Bible of where you have, like you were talking about Ezekiel earlier, and different parts of the Bible. Have you found hot spots of activity where it seems to be you've been able to decode, so to speak, in certain areas more than other areas?
Oh, yeah. Well, again, this is What we have consistently seen is there's a strong relationship between what the literal text is about and what the codes are about. So, for example, we're most recently looking for codes about Mubarak in Egypt. So what do? We go to chapters like Ezekiel chapter 30 and Isaiah chapter 19 that are literal prophecies in the Bible about future troubles of Egypt. So the whole thing fits together as being very, very intentional. When we looked for codes about Buddha, for example, he said, well, what's the most similar thing in the Bible? Well, it's Solomon. And because you have all of this wisdom that both are proclaiming and so forth. And so we looked in Proverbs and Solomon's Book of Ecclesiastes for codes about Buddha, and we found tons of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of blew us away. Because I thought, well, you know, gee, I thought that, you know, Hebrew codes wouldn't be about Buddhism. You right. know, that. But on the other hand, if the author of the Bible knew the future, the author knew all about Buddha.
Right, right. You know, the question I think comes to people's minds is how much room is there for interpretation? Obviously, you touched on it when you said about the words being run together and everything. But how much room is there for interpretation of this science? I mean, can you do the same research as say someone else does and both come up with something different, or isn't there that kind of space?
Well, I think there's a little bit of room because the Hebrew expert that's trying to take this string of letters sometimes has some choices in terms of whether they put the space between the words between this letter and that letter or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but really what his criteria is he's going to put them where it ends up with the longest code that makes the most sense.
Okay.
And so if you have a criteria like that, you tend to get fairly similar results. We have worked with two Hebrew experts over the last 10 years. We did do one parallel situation where we gave the same codes to both of them just to see, you know, how much would they differ in terms of what they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed about 95% of the time. So it wasn't perfect. They had some different interpretations here and there. And as I say, it's not something that's rock solid as far as, you know, gee, I found a prediction based on codes, and so I'm going to go out and invest all my assets with Bernie Madoff.
Right, right, exactly. We have a call up on line one. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, and I'll... this is the PSD with the Ed.
Yes, you're talking.
Right, okay. Yes. Yeah. This is Dave from Potsdam.
Hey, Dave.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm just calling. Hey. No, I got a question. Now, with the events in the Middle East, have they found anything in these codes yet?
We have recently been looking at some codes. About Egypt, Mubarak. We found a couple, for example, what it said about Mubarak was that he was a scared turtle. Well, he kind of acted kind of scared and he was very slow to change. So, you know, is that predictive? You know, you could have come across that 20 years ago and, you know, what would you do with the information? To be honest, we just started to do those searches. It typically takes a little while to do that, but I think in terms of the Middle East, what I talked about before, about finding all these codes about war in a chapter describing the third Jewish temple, that one makes my hair stand on end, because, you know, like I say, there's a huge Muslim mosque there at this point, and there are Jewish people who have collected all the materials to rebuild the temple. The only problem is there's a mosque on the site where they want to build it. In Time magazine, for example, in an article several years ago, it said that there's a huge aquifer underneath that temple, and that the aquifer level, water level, has been dropping dangerously. There have been all sorts of excavations under the Dome of the Rock, and the whole thing is in danger of collapse. So that it's quite possible what could happen in Israel is we could have the entire Muslim Dome of the Rock collapse from the aquifer just sinking into the ground, and all of the archaeological excavations, and then the Jews trying to build the third temple on that site. Well, you can imagine how the Muslims would react to that. You know, it's a powder keg over there, as everybody knows. And we have found a number of things. I mean, we have several articles posted on BibleQuickDigest.com that talk about events in the Middle East and end times and so forth. So I invite you to go to the site and read about that in detail.
Does that answer your question, Dave?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
Yes. 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 Very interesting. I read the book years ago, one of their final words, and I wasn't aware they're writing, you know, sentences and paragraphs, you know, like longer and longer. So that was very, you know, I was interested in, you know, years ago. So.
Very good.
Okay.
Well, thanks
for
the call.
All right.
Thanks. You know, it's a good point he brings up. Do you think, Ed, that we're going to get to the point where we're going to be able to predict at some point, and either by our technology improving, or I guess that's the only way it could improve, is if our technology improves?
Perhaps, unless the one who encoded this stuff intended for it not really to be used for prediction.
Okay.
And maybe there's an insurmountable barrier there. I mean, one of the bigger problems we run into repeatedly when we look at some of these codes that look predictive is often they're in symbolic language, and they might mean this or might mean that, and we don't really know. I mean, it's kind of like reading the prophecies of the Bible themselves, where they're very symbolic language, and you can, you know, make a case that, oh, this symbolizes Russia, and this symbolizes something else, but the prophecy may actually be about a different period in historical time. So there's so much involved here that you're really sticking your neck out if you're trying to make some reliable predictions, I think.
Right. I hear so much pro and con to it, but, you know, it's eerie when you start pulling things out of it. Like you said, 296 letters sequentially.
Well, it's not only that, but that 296 letter long code, and it's on our website homepage. Go to top 10 codes in the hot topics section. You'll see the whole code.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is a summary of the political career of Shimon Peres, who is currently, I think, pretty high up in the Israeli government. He's not, you know, Netanyahu, but he's like number two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the code is about. So the code not only is in decent Hebrew, but it describes about 10 different phases in the Shimon Peres's political career.
Wow. Okay.
And, you know, admittedly, you have to, when you're doing that, you have to take a little bit of the symbolism in the language and interpret it, but the fact is that the Hebrew expert who did that was able to do that fairly naturally. He said, well, this really sounds like this period in Perez's life, and so on and so forth. It wasn't a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, the code about Buddha we found that was 108 letters long. We didn't know what it meant. We handed it to a Buddhist friend of ours, and she just about passed out on the floor and says, this thing, it makes total sense. It didn't make total sense to us. It didn't make any sense, really.
Right.
Then she proceeded to go through the whole thing and explain what this might symbolize and so on and so forth. And that was pretty astonishing, because it wasn't like it was something that we were trying to conjure up. It was, we were just taking the language that was there and trying to translate it.
I have a, you know, you see these shows on TV and they talk about Bible codes and everything. They don't really explain it as well as you did. Is the codes always used as in, like, and I'm using this as a hypothetical, of course, skip every fifth letter, pick up the sixth, skip every fifth letter, pick up the next. Is it always that way, or can it be some kind of mathematical code within that?
Well, theoretically, you could do that, of course. You
mm-hmm.
could make it according to a Fibonacci sequence or something where, you know, the skip of the next one is equal to the sum of the skips of the prior two, so it becomes like a spiral or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem we have is we are using computer software to do this searching, and software that is out there is only available for these equally spaced skips.
Okay.
So it's really, when you're talking about technology changing, that's one place where there could be some advancement, is if we had some new software that developed that would allow alternative types of codes.
Right.
That's quite feasible.
Okay, okay. That's probably the next generation.
Yeah, it's a question of somebody taking the time and the money to do that kind of thing and being motivated to do it. And really, it was Jewish people who had a belief that it was divinely encoded that had that religious impetus to develop the software. And you know, they were computer programmers and mathematicians. They had that motivation to produce a program that could do the kind of coding we have. But for example, there's nothing else that's out there to take the Quran, for example, and to try to do the same thing. And it's partly because Muslims don't necessarily believe that you can do that kind of thing, whereas the Jews do.
Okay.
So it's the motivation that may lead to the programming. And this is a very new area.
We're
scratching the surface.
Is it always forward? It's never backward or anything like that?
No, it's either direction.
It's either direction. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Now, go forward or backward.
When you come to the end of what you're using, is it customary to start back over? In other words, do codes start at the end and then loop back over the start of the say the Torah?
Yes, we found a lot of codes like that.
Wow.
Yeah, we call them wrapped codes. As a matter of fact, this 108 letter long Buddha code is a wrapped code, and this one is a mind blower in a way. It wraps around the entire Hebrew Bible 9 times.
Wow.
It's just, and so it's like 100,000 letters between each letter of that code.
Hold it. It wraps around it 9 times.
It wraps around it 9 times.
Which 108 is divisible by.
Yeah. And so it's like, I mean, when you have something with a skip of 103,000 letters or something between each consecutive letter, you've got to say, this is gibberish. And we were expecting that, but we said, well, we're open-minded, we'll try this. And like I say, we passed it on to our Buddhist friend, and she said, this makes total sense to me. And it didn't to me, but...
So what is the actuarial odds on these? Because theoretically, this should not be possible. I mean, you'd be able to get one, maybe, you know, one at a couple of letters and that's it. Not 200 on your website, but what are the odds of this?
Well, you mean of the entire phenomenon? Or
of, say, the 108. Let's use that, and then we can go to 296.
Oh, wow. Well,
it's
going to
be
basically
trillions.
On our website in the Hot Topics section, the third item, it says scientific research papers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to that link, we've published 3 scientific papers where we compare the results, what we've actually found, with what you would expect to find by chance. And what you will see, surprisingly, is that you would expect to find some stuff by chance. It's not totally out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that because we have measured what the chances are of finding words and extensions on either side, it's just that the probability of doing that when you're working with the Hebrew Bible is dramatically higher than what it is from a coincidental situation.
Right, right.
So I'm definitely not taking the position that, you know, everything has to be intentionally put there. There could be some stuff that's just there as coincidental because you've got zillions of letters and possible combinations you could be looking at.
That's amazing. It blows my mind. Because the possibility of what you're talking about, it seems like you said we just scratched the surface of this.
Yeah, we really have. We're just beginning to scratch the surface.
Now, has any of this ever been researched in, say, the new Testament?
Well, there's some issues there. One is if you're going back to the New Testament, you're really dealing in Greek, and Greek is a language that is not a very the one you would choose to try to encode.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that there are a lot of vowels in Greek.
Right.
Well, in Hebrew, there are no vowels. And so it's a very terse language, which makes it much more proficient in terms of trying to encode something. Now, you say if there are no vowels, well, gee, that means that you could take two or three consecutive consonants and just insert the consonants of your choosing and make it mean anything you want. The only problem, and I've heard that criticism, the only problem is that applies to English, but it doesn't apply to Hebrew. And because if you take any three consonants, it's assumed what the vowels are. And if you didn't have that knowledge of the assumption for what these vowels are that you can't see, you would have a chaotic language and you would not be able to communicate in that language. If you could take something and have it mean, have 22 different spellings.
Right.
Yeah, and Hebrew is not a chaotic language.
Right. Okay. We're almost out of time, but I had to ask you. Now, people that are very interested in this, obviously, you can go to your website. And give you out your website one more time.
It's BibleCodeDigest.com.
Okay.
Or if you just type in Bible code or codes in your search engine, we usually come up number one. Sometimes we're number two or three, but usually we're in the top three.
Okay. Now, somebody that's already been into this research, can they show you some of their research as well? Can they submit some to you?
Sure. Yeah, we receive the results of research of some other researchers. Yes.
Very good. Very good. Well, Ed, I appreciate you coming on tonight and talking to us. I'm very interested. This is something I could talk about for hours, and really, just like you say, scratch the surface of. And I wish you a lot of luck with it, and I have a feeling we'll be talking very soon about more Bible codes that you've found.
Okay, well, yeah, I've enjoyed being on your program, and would be happy to return if you so chose.
You're always welcome here, sir. You're always welcome, and I thank you for coming on.
Very good, Robert.
Have a good night now.
You too.
Bye-bye. That was Ed Sherman talking to us about Bible codes. Very, very interesting, and I like the idea of the possibilities of it. Now, I don't know how that was coming out, because I was getting a lot of feedback through the headset, so if it was coming out a little funny, I apologize, but you know, it is what it is. You know, I may have been doing something wrong, but we'll see. We'll see. So what'd you think, Dave, of the interviews tonight?
Oh, that was very interesting.
That guy,
yes.
He was playing it. I think he was playing cards kind of close to the chest, not because he was trying to hold back anything, but because Bible codes are one of those deals where do you start and where do you end? Because it's almost all encompassing. You know what I'm saying? You can't really, if you focus on one area, you focus on it for so long that it's, you know, how do you focus on it for that long? You know what I'm saying? It's And be a broad area, like you said, like he was saying, that you can focus on one area and pull out so much, like war in Ezekiel, war 17 times, and the statistical probability of that is, you know, not of chance. So I don't know what to say in that. It's kind of a deal where you say to yourself, that's why I'm so interested. You say to yourself, how can this happen by accident if it's not? What if it's not by accident? So, I've always been interested.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
As an update, we thought we'd seen Charlie Sheen outside, but it turned out to be Sean Penn.
Oh.
So we sent him away.
Sean Penn. Yes. I am Sam.
Sam, I am.
Sam, I am. Hey, I want to thank everybody for listening to us tonight, and thank everybody for tuning in here. You know, there's always a new audience to be found, and I want to thank everybody for listening tonight and taking us on board on our new home here at WPAZ. Like I said, we're still going to be broadcasting WCHE, and we'll be probably simulcasting a lot. So I'll be probably broadcasting there at some nights, and here's some nights you're. No matter where you are, you're more than welcome to call in and take part in the show. Next week, we're going to have James Peniston and John Burroughs on. Maybe a special guest including them. We'll see how it runs. We'll be talking about Rendlesham. 30 years after the fact, more questions are coming out.
Bentwaters.
Look it up. I want to thank you for coming in, Dave.
England.
I want to thank you for coming in. We only got about 2 minutes, and then we're out of here.
That was quite a dog.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in, big guy, and I will talk to everybody next week. Thanks, Mom.